Of course, it could have been worse. Nicholas, in fact, chose to ignore his wife's advice. She suggested that all the liberal members of the Duma, which were a majority, be sent to Siberia as traitors. Still, he wouldn't budge from his commitment to the ideal of the Tsar's divine, personal, unlimited power as the only source of salvation for Russia. Of course, it's worth saying that had the Tsar conceded and created a government of national confidence, many liberals were already probably likely not to have been satisfied with this. As the war dragged on and discontent grew, many liberals began to speak not of a government of national confidence, but of a responsible government, a government that in fact wasn't just considerate of the interests of the Duma, but in fact was controlled by the elected representatives of parliament, that was institutional control, that was accountable to the Duma. Faced with this obstinacy of Nicholas II, even many conservative, even many monarchists sought to halt the seemingly now inevitable approach of revolution by forcing reform. In fact, there was serious talk of a palace coup in high social circles in 1916. The Grand Dukes were beginning to think perhaps Nicholas ought to be overthrown. Monarchist members of the State Council, this important advisory body to the Tsar, of the greatest elite, began to talk about the same. Aristocratic salons began to talk about perhaps it was necessary for there be a palace coup. Even officers had the same conversation. The only practical echo of this, though, was the murder of Rasputin in December of 1916, the result of a conspiracy involving very high-born and highly placed individuals. A nobleman and a leading rightist politician of the Duma was one of these members. A prince related by marriage to the imperial family was another conspirator, and even one of Nicholas II's own cousins. Mainly, though, these conservatives begged Nicholas to make political changes and warned, if not, a terrible revolution was certain. In the months that followed, liberals in the press and in the Duma, which was reconvened toward the end of 1916, continued to criticize the government with increasing passion and even hostility, desperate in the face of this growing crisis. But they feared doing anything more than speaking. They called, one of the leaders of the Duma called for a war of words, but he made it clear that only words could be used legally. And the problem was they were trapped as liberals by their political logic into a sort of frustrated immobility. They understood that that terrible upheaval was certain if nothing was done. But as liberals, they were committed to the principles of legality and therefore opposed in principle any sort of revolutionary action. They were also justifiably afraid, if they took bold action, of provoking a much more dangerous revolution in the streets. They all remembered 1905. In fact, some members of the Duma felt rather trapped and even powerless. In fact, as one wrote in a letter, a private letter, but seized by the political police, hence I could find it in the archive, just days before the revolution actually happened, in February of 1917, he wrote, the deputies of the Duma wander around like emaciated flies. Nobody believes in anything. Everyone has lost heart. Everyone feels and knows their powerlessness. The situation is hopeless. And as in 1905, the liberals' hands, their hesitancy, was forced. They were forced to do more than talk and worry when a lower class upheaval finally, inevitably, really, broke out in the streets. This began February 23rd, 1917, which was March 8th in Western Europe, which was International Women's Day, hence in Russia as well. And on this day, thousands of women textile workers, especially in Petrograd, shut down their factories and appealed to anybody still working to join them in the streets. The main focus of their strike was bread. Bread had become the symbolic focus of all their protests. The devastations of inflation, the widespread shortages of fuel and clothing and food, anger over the war, anger over government policy, deep distrust of the rich and the powerful, all seemed to coalesce around a single outrage, the lack of bread. Huge crowds marched through the streets shouting, "Give us bread," crowds began to head towards city centers, and it's clear from police reports they were in a nasty mood. Demonstrators along the way toward the center began breaking store windows, knocking trams over, and continually calling everybody who was still working out onto the streets.